Okay, I'm number six, and this is TMP Live, and here is this week's monologue. I distinctly remember a phone call with a relative of mine about what a vaccine mandate would cost me as far as my livelihood. The person responded with, "You gotta do what you gotta do." If it came down to it, and that person who obeyed what they were told, and I, a pariah, an exile, was at the mercy of people of my own blood who wouldn't lift a finger to stop my life from being ruined, then what good are friends? Well, a lot of good. See, in my journeys in life, I've encountered lots of wonderful people. I've felt the kindness of strangers in many hard times. This is something that has probably kept me going for this long, to be absolutely real with you. But I was always reminded as a young man that I could always choose who my friends were, but not my family. The friends and even family that I thought I had before 2020 didn't all go away. Just a lot of them have different goals in life. Mine is to have conversations like this. To let people see and hear them. Not everyone I know can come along for a ride like that. But some people I've met doing this certainly can. I bet in every walk of life there will be confidants and mentors to help guide folks on their way, good or bad. Really didn't expect to meet such good people doing this. When I say good people, I mean those who are selfless in their aims, people that live by and treat others by a code of non-aggression, people that seek truth and won't deny it because at first thought differently, people that will reach out if they hear something bad happen or will celebrate life's small victories in this world. Maybe I shit on collectivism too much. Maybe not the state, because fuck the state and the government too, but I mean the voluntary group of misfit anarchist pirates that occupy the TNP and AM wake-up chats. People are going to hear a lot from folks like us this year. And I agree with Ryan Christian on the fact that we are having an effect. There is no shadow banning us if you find others who would maybe like this kind of content and share it with them. Pack these streams with more angry pirates, R.I.P. Patrice, and let's bring hard times to the system instead of us all. And that's this week's monologue. Drop a six in the chat if you feel me, and you can find that on Substack and Instagram, and also, I believe, Ocelli.com now. So, yeah, if you like that, go check those out. But I have with me tonight a special guest. With me is Zoe, and Zoe, I don't even know where to begin to describe you. Viking warrior, sent from the heavens above, wielding a sword. I don't know. No, like what? The Valkyries. There we go. That's what I was going for. Not Viking. Derp. Okay. But so just maybe for the public, like, how would you describe what you do now with your speaking and your sort of activism, I guess, is the best way to put it. Is it?
Seriously? Okay.
Oh, technical gremlins, folks. Those little green bastards. I'm back. Okay, we're back.
Gremlins.
They are. They're real.
They were listening.
I don't believe in a lot, but I believe in technical. Like, they're real. Okay. It's just something that exists. Oh. But. So, where were we?
Anyways, hi, that was a lovely intro. Thank you. So a lot of people don't really know like what I did. So do you want me to just like kind of tell my story a little bit, like who I am?
A good place to start. And I'll probably interrupt and like veer the conversation in a completely different direction and we'll end up talking about industrial metal or something, but let's just have at it.
Yeah, I'm down.
Awesome. Okay, very good. I kind of picked up on that.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where, you know, like the title from the book came from, right? So if you saw Thrill Kill Medical Cult, then some people, some, there was even a subscriber of mine that like remade one of the My Life in the Thrill Kill Cult, because it was a band. He remade like the song, but with like medical lyrics. It was really cool.
Awesome. I think we have Steve popping in to maybe give us an update or to fix things. He might be there to fix things. He might be maintenancing. Okay.
Okay.
Steve, drop something in the private chat if you want to hop on. That's what your intentions are, sir.
Okay. Well, basically, I was working in the hospital during the pandemic, and I was able to see, I like to call it like the Sim City level view of everything that was going on. So you can kind of see everything at once, or like the central intelligence in the hospital, because it is where all the information goes to. It's like where you house all the information, you put it all together. So like, and even though my job was so siloed, I couldn't even see the bonuses come in when the COVID bonus money was coming in, because it was my job to help prepare the bill, but I didn't actually see the bill that went out. I didn't actually see the money that they got coming back in. I just sort of understood on the front end some of the financial bonuses, and it wasn't until later that I put together like all of the layers. But even with that, I was able to see way more of the hospital than I think even some people that were on site, because they just went to like one little department within the hospital, whereas I got to see kind of everything. Although some people that did work in the hospital did notice what I noticed too. And then of course, after the vaccine went out, then I saw all the injuries happen right away. And of course, mandates were coming. So I noticed you talked about mandates and what to do about them. And that was a major reason why I made the life choices that I did at that time. Because I remember
about the money trail, like sort of like the trail into the hierarchies, if you will, of the medical system, and why certain decisions were made and who pulled the trigger, literally and figuratively, if you want to talk about that, on those operations, if you will. Because to me, like, I was thinking about this earlier, a lot of this, if you study where like this platform, if you want, with mRNA came from, like a lot of it goes back into the military with a plan that was put in place already by the military for something that was supposed to happen. So you had a product, you had a situation, and then you had a execution of the plan, and then the medical system fell in line with that. Like, it almost seems
the medical system was taking orders from the military during Operation Warp Speed. So, I mean, it was more the military than healthcare. They were basically just kind of, they called it a partnership. But when you look at the documentation, and even a lot of people that write about the documentation that analyze it, they can point out to you, and you can find it for yourself. If you want to look at my sources when the book comes out too, it says right in it that it's the DOD and DARPA and BARDA and these other organizations that are basically the ones calling the shots, that have like kind of the 51% control of the partnership, if you will. Like the controlling interest. And then there were, you know, military style mandates that were going on with the healthcare industry capturing information for them too. And that's the part that really alerted me, because I was working in the industry in information, and I noticed the PCR test is probably a lot of this audience is aware. Probably very early on during the pandemic that the PCR tests were false positive all the time. And then eventually people like Derek Bros broke the story about cycle threshold being run too high. And I was already researching that. I couldn't even find the cycle threshold anywhere. And I worked in a lab and I know where to look, and I couldn't find it. Like, you'd literally have to call up a lab and ask them. And I think they even hid it from the techs to some degree. And there's different ways. I've talked to different people that can program some of these lab machines. There's different ways that I'm suspicious that maybe they did that. I didn't work in a lab during the time, but that made me think, well, okay, if the virus hasn't been isolated, if this COVID pandemic thing isn't what they're saying, what is the PCR test actually doing? Why does it have to, not only why does it have to go up everyone's nose like we never did that before, but it also became a screen and we never used to use it as a screen. Everyone had to take it. So I'm like, okay, they know the test doesn't work. They're still making people take it. So what is it doing? And it made me think, well, when I worked in a lab back in the day, this was a university lab, and we could do a lot of things that we would call in-house tests, but there were some things that were like too technical because it requires really high, you know, expensive machinery, and the hospital didn't have that kind of money to do, to have all kinds of specialized machinery for tests that we didn't run all the time. So we had like a core set of equipment that we use all the time. And then anything outside of that, we would call like a send-out test. So PCR was a send-out test, and it was a big deal because it was new tech at the time. And, you know, everyone in the medical field, we get new tech and it's like playing with a new toy. It's exciting. Everyone talks about it. It's like news to us. And so I remember when it was new and I would pay attention if it said PCR on it, because that meant it was some kind of genetic testing, usually like a cancer screen or some other kind of, you know, mutation, maybe inherited genetic disorder or something like that. That's the kind of things that PCR would test for. So it made me really suspicious that they were actually using people, using these tests to collect genetic data. And I remember seeing different scientists and experts actually coming out, like Dr. Dolores Cahill, I almost forgot her name for a second. She came out and said something about that also, that she thought maybe they would be doing that. I remember Dr. Judy Mikovits, who had mentioned something about PCR testing not being the only way to verify or confirm if there's a viral infection, that you need to do a confirmatory test. She was saying the same thing about PCR, that it could be a way to collect genetic data. And now I'm actually seeing articles coming out saying that's exactly what they're doing. And you can look at the CDC, and they have documentation saying that they were required to send to HHS, who was talking to DOD and DARPA, this genetic data. And you can look and you can see, even one of the links that I sent you, there's like a chart that describes, like, for the COVID test, every lab, for every single test, they had to send genetic sequencing data.
Is that the laboratory test directory or the guidance for reporting?
That is the guidance for reporting.
Gotcha. Yeah, there we go. I can pull that up. Give me 1 second.
Yeah. So in that chart right there, it shows you what they think the genetic, you got to go down to the, there's like a chart. About halfway. There we go. See how it says, requested reporting, technical specifications, notes on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, it says, those are the genetic sequences that they're supposed to send. But if there's no virus, what is that actually doing?
I mean, are they creating just a database of genetic sequences?
Exactly. That's what they're doing.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure.
This is evidence of it. This is evidence that they are creating a genetic database right here. I mean, now what they think they're doing, what the lab thinks they're doing on the surface, is that they're collecting these isolated parts of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. But if you look into the documentation, which I've done the research and found multiple people that explain that they never really isolated a virus. What they did was they, in Wuhan, the first people that had it that were in the hospital, what they did was a BAL test, which is a bronchial alveolar lavage. What they do is they put some fluid in your lungs, and they usually put a scope down. You're sedated when this happens. And, you know, they take a like wash of the fluid. They aspirate that out, and they took like multiple patients' samples and mixed it together. after they did this, after they got this sample, they took swabs from it and then they mixed it all together and then they put it in a computer. And then they thought that they found that these four patients had some sort of genetic similarity, and they decided that that was the virus. And so they made a computer generated thing that looks like a blue spiky ball thing that they called coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2. That's how they created the virus. So if that is true, then what is the genetic sequences that they're actually collecting? There's even a doctor, Dr. Lee Merritt. She's called the medical rebel, I think. And she's been doing a lot of talking about how they didn't isolate the virus and how basically it's all AI. And you can't teach a little kid how to do this. Like, you can teach a little kid how to isolate a bacteria. You can teach a little kid how to, you know, find like a spore of a fungus under a microscope, but you can't find a virus.
Well, this is when I learned of a concept of Koch's and Rivers postulates. So it's actually Rivers postulates that would work with viruses, I believe. And Koch's postulates works with bacteria. So whenever you're trying to prove the presence of something, the process of Rivers postulates was never done with SARS-CoV-2. It was literally sent from a lab via email to somebody, and they confirmed that it exists from the email. And yeah, then they copied the information from that email of the spiky ball protein to make the stuff that was in the shots.
Right. Exactly.
Now, you'd think that there's some kind of, for a lack of a better term, fuckery going on there.
Uh-huh.
Because when you have the solution sent to you and how fast they were able to reproduce that for the vaccine, like, what was it, weeks after?
I think it was only like 3 days that Moderna had like a template that they said they were ready to start working on after that, after the virus isolation, like something like ridiculous, like 3 days.
Yeah. So they already had the creepy crawler machine and all the peripherals for it built by the time that this was in place. That's what's really suspicious about the whole thing.
Right.
So then when you start following the breadcrumbs backwards, right? That's what leads you into how intertwined, like you mentioned, the government and the military were with all of these medical decisions, but then also whom benefited, like who the beneficiaries were of all of this being done to us. Like, this was right, a massive operation with,
well, like, one of the
trillions
bonuses
of dollars
was,
of profits at stake.
Normally, hospitals don't make money off of lab testing. It's been that way for decades. It's not a moneymaker. It's a money drain. They have to do all these labs on people in order to, you know, prove or disprove whatever they call it a differential, like whatever they think this cluster of symptoms might be, like this set of, you know, 10 different diseases or something. And they sort of like work their way down the list and through a process of elimination. And then they decide, you know, this is the disease that you have based on the diagnostic testing. And there's almost like a protocol of if this, then that. They have to do all these tests, and it costs the hospital money to do all of that. They can't get around it. But for COVID, the CARES Act made it so all the PCR testing was covered. They got money for it. And then they got a bonus every time they got a COVID diagnosis. They got a 20% bonus. And then they put someone on a ventilator and they get a 20% bonus. And then they give someone remdesivir and they get a 20% bonus.
Sounds like payola, you know. sounds like a rigged system, almost like a racket.
Yeah,
I called it state-sponsored malpractice a long time ago. You know, David Knight referred to parts of what you were describing earlier, as well as you know, just the medical martial law. You know, something that was implemented. There's really nothing like this plan other than other plans that I've heard of in the past that were coups in America, because I mean, yeah, this led to an election by mail, which are totally, yep, trustable. An economy
Another
that was
conspiracy theory right there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I got and censored then, for that.
Oh, did you know? Yeah. Welcome. We're in a lot of clubs together there, Zoe. We're in a lot, yep, of clubs together there. Yeah. Yep. Well, another thing too is that, well, speaking of which, so you have all of the reasoning behind how you can wrap people up into these outrage cycles, like Black Lives Matter, like the death of George Floyd. Yeah. And then what, you know, the what some people would think is like the horseshoe of, or the opposite of, in January 6th that we just mentioned. This group violence that now you can attribute towards certain people. Well, this is after that you isolate people and you take their jobs away, you take their livelihoods away, you take any type of ownership away. And then all the while you're building up a genetic database. Man, it sounds like IBM punch cards again. I don't know where I heard that one from, but you know, it sounds like they're building a wall around us. So that way, if we ever wanted to escape, they have all of our genetic information. And when I say they, I mean whoever the fuck is behind the military actually doing this to us. Because I don't think we direct it. I don't think we go to a voting booth and press a button that directs this sort of stuff. In fact, no. This sort of stuff is what supersedes that. This is true power. This is disgusting. This is what it looks like when you give any entity that amount of power, because it can abuse it with no repercussions other than people like you speaking up, Zoe. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but please continue. Like, this is a crazy story. So, I mean, I think where we're at here, folks, is that the medical system, as Zoe had found, is a beneficiary of basically a military plan that was there to basically disrupt and subvert all of our individual autonomy. Am I on to something?
I mean, yeah. I only saw, I guess I focus on the book in what I saw in the hospital, but that was horrific and tragic, and probably have PTSD just from that. That was, you know, that was where people were supposed to go to get better. That, you know, we thought we were healing people and doctors were supposed to make people better. You know, we thought our whole lives, we thought that's where you go to be born. That's where you go to die. That's where like the most important parts of life happen. And as I was going through and I'm thinking about making this speech on April 15th here, I am kind of dumbfounded with everything that I saw even before the vaccines. Like, people keep talking about the vaccines being so awful, and they are, trust me, they are. I mean, I've been vaccinated. I didn't question it nearly as much as I should have until they started, you know, really with the psyop of the fear and keeping us in fear for so long. And just the pressure towards the one solution of it being the vaccine and only the vaccine, denying natural immunity. And, you know, pushing it forward with Operation Warp Speed and making us take an experimental injection. I mean, all of that had me questioning vaccines like never before. But I didn't necessarily think that they like were a magic bullet before that. I mean, I was willing to question them before that, but it really woke me up, just the pressure that they put on everyone for the COVID one.
It was a strategic move, if you ask me. Like, if you would have surveyed people beforehand, I'd seen things like this out there where you could survey people and like in the 90th percentile, people would have a confidence in vaccines. Like, of all the other medical, you know, type of stuff that's out there, anything from chemotherapies to antibiotics, you would probably get the most positive reacts from people generally with vaccines.
Yeah. And it's so all it was marketing.
A safe play. Yeah, it was an incredibly safe play. People had that kind of affinity towards this. I mean, this is something where all you had to do was basically label a person before that as somebody that was an anti-vaxxer. And then they just had a stink of shit on them.
Yeah.
Like for professionally or even personally.
Especially in healthcare, which I call the cult. And I call it the cult for a reason. I was actually thinking, well, is it a cartel, like a mafia, or is it a cult? And I thought, okay, well, people that are in a cult don't know they're in a cult. People that are in a cartel, they kind of know they're in the cartel. I mean, even if they're not at the high levels of the cartel, maybe they're just like contracting with the cartel. They have an idea. Like, there's some shady people. They have some guns. They pay with cash. They don't want a receipt. I mean, you have a clue. In the cult, you can shake someone and try and wake them up and be like, you're in a cult. Don't take the Kool-Aid. And they won't believe you, because that's how medicine is. Like, it's a very long indoctrination process. And it's not just the people that are in healthcare, you know, because we're supposed to be educators and experts. And so you get your messages from the people in healthcare, which is why they're so indoctrinated, why they all say the same thing. And so, yeah, if you question something that's accepted, I mean, I get called an asshole, a jerk. I've gotten death threats just on Substack for my content.
Well, I mean,
I'm not even in healthcare anymore. So if I was in it, it would be way worse.
There is a phrase though, Zoe, that if they ain't hating, you're not doing something right. So or maybe I'm paraphrasing, but you know, at least you can get some sort of reactions on a social media platform, because I know everywhere else you're probably shadow banned all to hell.
I am. I can't get any traction on Twitter. My support, my subscribers, whatever, they just disappear overnight sometimes. Gab, no one sees anything. Like, I have to go in other groups and post other random stuff. I hope that they see.
Gab is very... a trip right now. Gab is an absolute trip right now.
Even Telegram, I've noticed some weird stuff. I've had people just like ban me from a channel. Like, I don't even know who the person is or what I did. And like, it makes it so you can't even post anything on Telegram unless like you know the person directly or something.
Oh, wow.
So I had that happen once. Yeah.
Telegram was kind of funky, like, to set up. Like, I originally didn't get it at first, and then created, like, they have different things. Like, you can have a channel, and then you can have a chat that's connected to that channel. So I had to figure that shit out to finally open it up so where people can actually come in and talk with us, which is what I wanted. So, but now that that's worked out, actually, the TMP Telegram group is a lot of fun. And I'm glad you're in there, because you're dropping links to stuff all the time. And, you know, things that the other researchers, we call it the citizen reach, the citizens researchers,
which is funny because like I never set out to do that, but I just happen to have my pulse or my eye on what's going on, or a pulse on what's going on. And nobody's talking about, you know, things like this case that might make us all thought criminals. No one's talking about the fact that they might have been making a genetic database, and they might be surveilling us through our medical records. And I don't know. So yeah, I just post whatever I happen to have my eye on, and I don't know, it turns into news. That's just how it works.
Well, it's crazy because like, you know, the political field that's out there right now that I have to kind of suffer through, because I've removed myself mentally from a lot of it. You know, a lot of it thanks to, you know, some good friends like Tom Cooper and Steve Poikinen, just like being comfortable with being an outsider to the show at this point.
Yeah.
But still, like, you see so much from the right about, you know, Trump and this and that with the vaccine, and there's been a lot of discussion with Tim Pool, I guess, about, you know, how he's trying to move past that. He's trying to move past Trump's big mistake. Well, I think that when it comes down to picking an executor of any sort that made such a mistake, I'm not interested anymore. Like, there's got to be somebody else. Like, give me the guy that Steve used to work with, maybe at the Renaissance Fair that people threw tomatoes at or something like that. Like, give me that guy for fucking right. 4 years. If Zelensky can do it and then take his country to war against Russia with our help, we could put a fucking potato in there. And then we could make this happen, like, especially compared to what we have now. So, I mean, there's not a lot to gain in like the political realm. So because of that, I've sort of fallen out of favor with like large scale anything whenever it comes to movements and other things. Cause like the bigger creators that could point their audiences in the right direction towards any type of civil action. And I'm not talking about violence. I'm talking about civil action, like large mass scale disobedience, like, fuck you, we're not showing up to work, anything like that. Like that, that type of stuff has been damaged to me because, like, there's a lot of people that don't seem sincere out there. And it was hard for me to find a group of people that I would find even sincere enough to even want to fuck with. But nowadays, I mean, it seems that maybe it's me, but I feel like we have a pretty good thing going. Like, there are plenty of connections now compared to where we were when I started this show in 2021. This community of anti-vaxxers and what people consider themselves to be patriots at the time, and, you know, all kinds of people, and even literal legit anarchists, agorists, all types of people. There's cross sections that have brought us all together now. Because
honestly, I really think that's
happened to us. Yeah,
so that's where we need to be going. That's actually what I'm trying to look to do. Also, is to bring, like, I've found these different freedom groups too. Like the medical freedom group is a big, you know, sector of people, and they tend to be, you know, kind of one line of thinking. And then there's like the anarchist, voluntarist, agorist kind of people, and then there's like the Christian conservatives, and all of us, it seems like we're in these same groups. We follow the same people. We agree on a lot of things. And I'd like to just figure out how we can get past all these labels, because I think it makes it harder for us to work together. If you like have some sort of a label that someone has in their head, well, I have to hate you because you have this label. I want to find the thing that can get us past that. Like, I thought freedom would be the thing. I think freedom is the thing, honestly, but we haven't quite figured out how to like trust each other and work together yet. But I do think we're all working towards the same thing, just in different ways. And I think that's fine. I think we all need to work at it in our own way. And it's valuable no matter how you're doing it, as long as you're doing something, because I mean, it's going to be a group effort in the end, and we're going to have to figure out how to work together, because there's a phrase that I'm sure your audience has heard about, the lone wolf, and, you know, don't be the lone wolf because you'll get picked off, you know, if you're at home alone or whatever, the Fed can just show up and you're gone and okay, moving on. But if there's a whole bunch of you, that job's going to be a lot harder, and none of us wants it to get to that point. But I mean, that kind of is a survival strategy, is survival in numbers. And I think that's why we all want to find each other and why we all want to work together. But there's definitely a lot of paranoia and distrust out there. I'll say that.
So there's rage going on in one of the chats about Telegram stealing personal info. And like, yes, I mean, I'm fully aware that every social media platform, including the ones we're broadcasting on, are probably stealing every fucking thing that I do. Everything.
They all do. They steal your face. They steal your email. They steal your phone number. They, you know, they figure out your IP address. Yeah, they're surveilling you 100%. It's a risk that I had to take. And I trust me, like, I tried to get completely and entirely off grid. I de-Googled my life. I don't use a Googled phone. I use like a VPN when I could. Now I don't, because even those will steal your information if you don't use the right one. I use an alternative browser. I use an alternative operating system, and all of that stuff just makes your life really complicated. Nothing's compatible anymore. Nothing works the same way. I literally wrote the book in an alternative program other than Word. And like, the spell check doesn't work the same. The grammar doesn't work the same. The buttons are all in a different place. Like, it's a learning curve to learn all of this stuff. But if some of us don't take the leap and like try and make it work, then it'll never happen. But the reality is, the big tech, they make everything work. And that is how we're connecting right now. And so I've heard a lot of people say, you just have to use the tools that you can while you can, and expect that, you know, they're going to come for you eventually. And you just have to, like, you know, take the risk. And if you get censored or you get taken down, then so be it. And I know people that have had, you know, their entire social media get taken down, their websites get taken down. And yeah, it does have an impact on their income and their life, and they don't enjoy that experience, but they come back. They find a way to come back. And that's the game. I guess that's the war right now. that we're playing.
Well, you talked about freedom, and I've mentioned this in past shows that I think that freedom or liberty, like to be more specific, like you have the freedom to sort of just swing away. You know, the liberty part is to not hit anybody. Like the personal responsibility and autonomy, raising people in a culture that values those things. We're talking about generations that it takes mm-hmm. to build up that culture. Yeah. So essentially, like what happened in 2020 to all of us is that there was an earthquake that created a rift between people like us, Zoe, and people in the regular world, I guess, if you want to call it that. But there's a hell of a lot more of us than I originally thought there was. There's a lot of great and smart people out there that I've met, you know, that could run circles around me with understanding this stuff. And I've met a lot of them, thank goodness, they helped me along. And there's also people that will support and lift people like us up. Like there are people out there that, you know, maybe their thing isn't speaking in public. Maybe their thing isn't even making their, you know, their name known, but they want to help people. And they want to help people like us get a message out there. So I have found sort of a new faith in humanity the last couple of years doing this, because I've met a lot of great people and they've pointed me in the right direction, at least in my personal life, let alone whenever it comes to what I do with the show here and with the network. So, I mean, the way to pass that along, though, like I said, is through generations. Like we have to put systems in place that let children and other future generations after them know that they have a right to autonomy. They have a right to exist in this world with certain rights of life and liberty. But then also that system doesn't scale up in levels of authority beyond like the scope of like maybe your, maybe at a region at most. But like the way that you have a physical and Vance, shout out to Vance from Saturday Night Anarchy, brings this up all the time about land rights, like the sphere around you of influence of your local area, your water, your air, you know, your natural resources, mm-hmm. all of these things that like the outside world takes you away from, the regular world wants to take you away from and just make you mm-hmm. a widget in a machine that. Right. Yeah. That really that you just exist in, and they were just talking about this on Blunt Force Wisdom, is that you just live in a 15-minute city, you know, and in a place that you'll never own.
Yeah.
You know, buying shit with your time, your units of time that you'll never own, just like a Black Mirror episode.
That's really why I made my decision to quit my job. I mean, I felt like I was a slave my whole life. And I, you know, my mom used to tell me, you know, it's a game, you got to learn how to play it. And I just thought, that's not the world I want to live in. But that is the world that I felt like I lived in. And so I did play the game and I got good at playing the game. And I mean, I was successful in my career, but I mean, it didn't bring me fulfillment. It just made me feel like more of a slave to debt. That's all it did. It didn't, having letters next to my name didn't make me feel special. I mean, doesn't make you special, doesn't make you smarter. It just, I don't know. It, when 2020 came along and I realized I was actually going through a divorce at the time, and I was going to be looking at, you know, splitting double income down to one income. And I was looking at, okay, well, how can I make a life for myself? And I couldn't, you can't buy a house. I couldn't, I mean, I could get a car maybe, but I couldn't buy a house. I could barely stay in the apartment that I was at. I was going to have to downgrade pretty much everything. And I thought I was doing well for myself. But that's just how the economy was at that time. And it had been inching up that way for quite some time. And now it's even worse than it was 4 years ago with inflation. But I was like, okay, so I've worked my whole life and now I have to go back to college or do something if I want to have the same quality of life. Like the system's rigged. This is ridiculous because you have to take on more debt, which you're never going to be able to pay back. The system's rigged. And then at the same time, the mandates were about to take my job away if I, because And to this day, they remain. I know that ICANN and some other organizations fought the Supreme Court and tried to get them to, or did get them to say that they were removing the mandates for the COVID vaccine mandates for healthcare workers. But as far as I can tell, they have not. I'm looking at jobs and they still demand that you get the COVID vaccine or that you do the PCR test, which I wasn't going to do either. So even if you get around the, if you manage to get an exemption, whether it's a medical or a religious exemption to the COVID vaccine, if you manage to get that, which they only give out very limited now for COVID, and they probably won't give it for other vaccines. That's the part they don't tell you either. They still make you get all the other vaccines as a condition of hire, which has always been how they've done things. And so then they make you do the PCR test. Sometimes it's once a week, sometimes it's three times a week, but you're having to take the PCR test, which I've never done and I'm still not going to do. So there was no way for me to stay working in that field. So my job got taken away. And then what was I going to do? Then I was definitely going to have to go back to college or get some sort of other kind of training or create a job for myself. And I almost feel like that's the exact position that they wanted to put everybody in, because a lot of people, if you have kids to feed and a family to take care of, it's really hard to do what I did and just give them the middle finger and be like, know what, take my job, I'll figure it out. Most people, they did what they thought they had to do. And at first I was really angry at them because I felt like, you know, if we all did this all at once, then we could have stopped this right there. We could have had them at their knees right at that point. Hospital couldn't have made any money. They couldn't have given any more vaccines. You know, we could have just, you know, stopped the whole thing, but not enough people stood up at the right time. And so the machine continues on, grinding on. And now we're years down the road and we think there's no health vaccine mandates. There still are. And there still are for some other jobs too. The job that I used to do before that I did actually through the whole healthcare thing, I used to do wildlife rescue. I worked as in a zoo. I was a zookeeper before. And guess what they make you get before you go to work for anything like that? Or if you're going to go to school, because I did education. So yeah, then you got to get the vax and wear a mask and all that to go into a school. So pretty much all my jobs got taken away.
So I bet the zoos were even doing tests just on how.
And they vaccinated all of the endangered species, which they have a genetic record on. It's called the Species Survival Program. So, yeah, I've heard some researchers say that it actually doesn't transfer genetic code, but I think there's still some sort of synthetic genetic material that is transferred that causes a reaction of some sort, and it's not good. And they have given zoo animals internationally, the ones that are in the Species Survival Program, this is the stock of endangered animals that are supposed to be bred and released if they're endangered in the wild. And some species are endangered in the wild and they only have them in zoos. And so they maintain a genetic record. And when they breed them, you know, they get a genetic sample and they try and make sure to keep the genetic variety as much as possible. So like they're not inbreeding, even though they have like a small collection of animals. And now they're all vaccinated.
Well, then also the interaction of the vaccinated with the animals too, because I mean, this is sort of an out there subject that gets talked about a lot in certain circles, but the shedding, like this is something that was denied originally, but then all of a sudden, like I'm talking to people about wastewater. And that reminded me of like some of the research that I looked into during COVID, where, you know, the governments around the world were taking wastewater samples to see if COVID.
Well, they're PCR testing the wastewater. And my theory was that they were, it's PCR testing. And they were talking about that actually when I was working in the hospital. The leaders were, you know, in videos talking about, so this is how we're predicting COVID, is we're monitoring the sewer and we've got PCR tests in there basically that are just monitoring the sewer water. So, you know, if there's a chicken flu outbreak or, you know, cows are suddenly the problem or it's COVID, then our PCR tests are going to tell us. And then we'll know that there's an outbreak before anyone else because we're monitoring the sewer water because we're geniuses. It's basically the I mean, that's not verbatim. Don't quote me. But yeah, that was like the gist of the message. And I went to the CDC and I looked at the paperwork. And yes, they were monitoring sewage water with PCR testing. But at the time, a researcher who has since vanished, sorry, for years. That was my microphone that I strapped there. Ice Age Farmer, he was talking about it too, about that they, I'm sorry, dropping the mic. I lost my train of thought there.
No, it's okay. I was going to throw this out there for you too, because it seems like you are well researched into this, and for the amount of things that have been bounced off me that I think they're absolute rubbish. But then this one kind of like intrigued me a little bit. Talking of the wastewater, the air. So whenever poo evaporates, right, it actually gets swept up into air, and then there's poo waves that get carried through the air from continent to continent. I even heard that the African continent was getting, or the West Indies, I'm sorry, were blowing over COVID poo onto Florida, and that's what was causing outbreaks.
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
Okay. It reminds me of Arizona, because in the summer there, the sewers would, you know, heat up and you get like the air coming up from the sewer. And I remember sitting outside with my friends at like an ice cream parlor, and it was way too near a sewer, and we're like, can we move? I can't eat and smell this at the same time.
Yeah, there are such things as poo clouds, folks, but yeah, the way that this was described is that, you know, people could bring it, the infection, even if isolated. And this was sort of like the reason why it intrigued me is that because it proved that like the type of quarantining that we were doing was completely and utterly useless and insane, even is because like if we can get infected by poo clouds coming from other continents that we can't stop, you know, in air pockets, you know, sort of the travel through the sky. I don't think staying in your apartment and watching Netflix is really going to do anything.
You know? Like, no, I think we were supposed to stay home and get the messaging, you know, get the programming of, you know, stay home and be afraid. That's what I think that was about.
Well, think about the original messaging too, with this being transferred by fomites, that, you know, the people were wiping off their fucking groceries and things like that. Like this was an airborne virus. To my knowledge, it always was, if you want to call it a virus. And that's if, you know, like if you can include a new definition of virus that started off as a recombinant bat vaccine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how does that happen when every other virus that they say jumped from animals to humans, that it takes, you know, many, many generations. Well, how did that happen in just one bat to one person?
Well, did they spray the bats with the recombinant bat vaccine carrying the spike protein, and then the bats were able to reproduce it in the wild? Like, could they actually,
you know,
trigger
they were
animal
studying that in one lab, I think, but I don't know. Maybe, honestly, I think when you look at the outbreaks over, like, the viral outbreaks, like the 1918 one, and even, you know, polio, and there's a poisoning event that preceded those outbreaks almost every time. So with COVID, I'm thinking that people are overlooking the possibility of graphene oxide, because if you look at the symptoms of graphene oxide, which can be in the air, it's a nanoparticle, it can be in, and it is in the air, they're aerosolized, it's in the chemtrails, so it's coming down over us in the air. They can use it, actually, I think, in, and they're not supposed to, but they can use certain chemicals. And I believe Ryan from The Last American Vagabond has talked about this on his show, that they've used these nanoparticles, graphene, to sanitize air in like the HVAC system, or that they were talking about that at one point. And so they may already be doing it, because sometimes when they talk about it, they're already doing it. And kind of with the chemtrails, they've been doing it for a long time, and they're just now saying, oh yeah, we're doing that to fix climate change though.
Well, it's funny you brought that up, because I have talked to an environmental hygienist about this, somebody that puts in air cleaning systems in hospitals. Mm-hmm. This person fought for his life and for his family in Canada, and resisting masking and resisting the government not doing anything of its duty in order to follow up with the failures in their air cleaning systems that this gentleman had pointed out. So the guy I talked to, his name's Dale Richardson, and I did an interview with him way back when with my good friend Lisa Belanger. And I talked to him and his daughter, because Dale had pointed out to the Canadian government that the system that they were putting in place to clean the air wasn't going to work. It just wasn't. Like, he had the scientific, you know, sort of proof that, you know, doing the calculations that he does with, you know, air, you know, the square space that you're dealing with and the air system and how much PSI is put through that, a mix of chemicals, all these different factors. Like, he could show the government legit that they were just putting something in that was going to be a fail, and they just ignored it altogether and just went on ahead with it. So like, he tried. And then whenever he, you know, tried to, you know, sort of bring this up, all of a sudden he's got family services at his house trying to take his daughter. Now he has to go to family court. Yeah. Attacked personally. So there's
one of the tactics. Yeah. I read this book by a guy named Kevin Annett. He's a Canadian. He was speaking out against the Canadian government for crimes against humanity, and calling COVID crimes against humanity at the very, very beginning. This is actually how I found the guy. And it turns out that he had been working with the natives and found that they had like mass graves of the natives, and that they were killing them in the residential schools. And it was the Catholic Church, the Canadian government and the Catholic Church working together. And that vaccines were one of the things that they did to the natives to, you know, test on them. And it didn't work out very well. So he was calling it out very early on. And so he talks about the tactics that they used to take him out, because he was a priest in the church, and he was calling out the church, which you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to call out the government either. So they somehow like talked his wife into divorcing him, which like took his kid away, and he could never work again. He couldn't get a driver's license anymore. And like, basically, you know, for 20 years has already been, you know, totally shut down, isolated, banned, censored. But he, you know, managed to find a group of people, like you were talking about, a group of like-minded people, and they were the natives at first, and then a lot of activists around the church that wanted to call them out for the crimes. And now, you know, there's a huge organization, and, you know, it, life totally changed, and he was able to, you know, get them to admit to their crimes and kind of hold some people accountable, and he's still doing it. So, I mean, it is possible. It's just not easy, because yeah, they're going to come for you. And one of the points that he makes too, is that they don't actually want to make you a martyr, because then they're going to wake up way, way, way more people way too fast. And so they'd really just rather get rid of you quietly. So, you know, the whole gremlins that we had at the beginning of the show.
People get frustrated. I mean,
yeah, all that kind of stuff is meant to like wear us down, and here we are still doing it. So cheers.
brings me back to a movie called Falling Down with Michael Douglas. There's a character in it where he's saying, I'm not economically viable. And he's standing outside of like a bank, and he's holding a sign, and it's just, everyone thinks he's a nut because he's telling everybody on the sidewalk that he's not economically viable. Well, I almost lived in a world where I probably would have to do that, that I'm not economically viable because I don't take my shots. So I don't belong in the system anymore. Like, I can't earn to feed my family. I can't earn to buy property. I can't even get a loan. I can't go into the bank. The first interview I did doing this was actually with a young lady named Jane, who's one of her great grandfathers, I don't know how many generations back, founded or helped found the Bank of Hawaii. And she was barred from entering a bank of her Bank of Hawaii branch because she refused to wear a mask. So they threatened to cancel her account. And she showed up without a mask to cancel it herself. Just to walk away from those institutions. Like, it really, those little symbolic things that people, you know, they might brush off here and there, but like you were talking about before, the snowball effect that it could have. And not that effect, guys. I know what you're thinking out there in the TMP chat, but glad you laughed at that, Zoe. You've obviously seen the movie.
I have a dirty mind. I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well,
moving on.
Moving on. But the cumulative effect of that can happen, though, is just everybody making this symbolic moves. Like, if everybody told, you know, Walmart or Amazon or any of these large entities that, no, we will not do this, we will not comply with this, that it has to hurt them at some point. Like, I know large businesses can lose a lot of money without it affecting, like, the effect on small businesses that COVID had is just fucking ridiculous. It destroyed families. It destroyed families for generations of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And true ownership. Like, what do you have to hand down to?
There was a group in this area. Actually, I'm on the rural Oregon coast, BFE, middle of nowhere. And there is a small town out here where there was a freedom group, and they came together and they would tell shop owners, if you are not going to let us in there without a mask, none of us are going to shop there. And they would like all come together like as a group. Like they made it like a shopping group, and they would all show up at once. And I know I did that in different towns by myself, and I got nowhere. But if you do that all as a group, it actually works. And the businesses didn't want to turn down that much business because it was a lot of business. So you can have an effect. But yeah, I'm starting to think it is far more important for us to stand together than it is for us to do it alone. I mean, I don't want to discount like what anyone's doing on their own, because that counts too. Because people see what you're doing, and that has, you know, like a positive ripple effect too. But for something like that, they need, when you're trying to direct or impact someone like a business owner directly, you have to do it as a group to where they will see the impact.
Well, I mean, what Risha brings up here in the chat about, oh, I'm sorry, let me show that again, about Derek Bros. Like, I know why Ryan Christian could probably say in confidence that we are having an effect, because like people can bring these things to court. They can bring them to the public and the public record. I think that's probably most important, because I have no faith in the courts to render a judgment, because their judgments are so fucking subjective and they really do no research.
Well, and as Derek points out, he says that the whole fluoride trial, it's not about removing fluoride from the human diet. Like, it's not just in the water. It's also in like fruit juice, and it's in food, and it's in tea. So removing it from the water, and it's in, you know, obviously dental stuff. So they're not talking about removing it from there. They're just talking about, well, how much is toxic? That's the whole thing. It's not, let's get rid of it because it's unsafe. They're like, okay, well, it's bad, but how bad is it? And then, okay, well, if it's a little bad, then we can use it a little bit. But, you know, if it's a lot bad, then we'll still use it. We'll just use it not as much. That's basically what it's going to boil down to. So yeah, I don't have any faith that these courts, and the same thing with the other court case that I sent you some links for that I've been talking about, the one that's in the U.S. Supreme Court right now. They heard opening arguments on it, and they haven't decided yet. And basically this is our medical system that is censoring us directly, but not just us. This is social media. So it started with all of, I'm sure you got censored, I got censored, we talked about that already. AM Wake Up censored, like pretty much everyone that most of the people you that watch you has probably been censored. And it's because of this. So like on Twitter and everywhere else, they are censoring because the U.S. government and CISA, which is also a U.S. intelligence organization and FBI, told them to censor. So they're going to do it to a certain degree on their own. But the government's like, you're not doing it enough. And we're going to get really mad at you if you don't do it as much as we want for the things that we want when we want. agree, Yona.
Yona's the best.
And so yeah. This form, I just wanted to show it real quick because I just think this is completely ridiculous and no one's even looking at this. So they call this originally, this is multiple states that are suing the U.S. government. It was Louisiana and Missouri, and then some doctors and the Gateway Pundit and Jim Hoft from the Gateway Pundit. So all those people are suing the U.S. government. And it was originally directed at Biden. So it was called Missouri versus Biden. And then because Biden didn't want his name on it, then they, I mean, that might not be why, but I think that's why. Then they changed it to Murphy versus Missouri. So like it has a really misleading name, but that's the point of this whole thing. And so this is what, if you want to scroll through a little bit, if you go down to like page 19 is where it starts. That's where like this is the AMA and all of the many of the organizations that tell your physicians how to practice and basically what to think. This is them telling you vaccines are safe. Well, their own documentation shows that there's people dying and there's side effects and they've had to address it. And they have the VAERS system that they can look at. They have the WHO Vigibase system that they can look at. They have other kinds of data that they can look at from the CDC, from the ICD-10 data set. And here's their arguments that vaccines save lives, which we know they don't. And they go into stuff like, well, it's making us harder. It's making us have to work harder because we have to basically provide information that discounts what the alt media is saying. So this is actually evidence that we are having an effect because they're complaining about us right here. They're saying that we're having an effect, changing people's minds, making people hesitant to take vaccines, making people question things, and they have to spend more effort and more time to get people to take the poisons that they're peddling, and they don't want us to have a say, so they want to censor us so that it's easier for them to poison us. That's basically what this comes down to.
So here's my problem with argument one. They didn't get past the first three words without fucking up.
Right.
They can't prove that.
No, and it gets more insane from there. Like, they didn't even like start with the good shit. It's just like that the whole way through.
They could have started with unicorns poop ice cream. It would have had just as much validity. Like they have no evidence showing that this, how could they show that directly save lives?
They need to have the unicorn that poops the rainbow ice cream, though. No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Rainbow sherbet. Rainbow sherbet is pretty fire.
No. So is the rainbow unicorn for the Squatty Potty.
Oh.
The ad for that. That's what that reminds me of.
I mean, they had something there with the Squatty Potty, though. I will have people argue that is the proper way that human beings should expel their waste. Is to squat like that. I don't know.
But the funny thing is how they advertised it. They made it all like kid friendly. And so they had a unicorn that like pooped rainbow like Play-Doh. And they literally have a toy now that is a unicorn that poops rainbow Play-Doh.
But that is the reality that other people live in, right? That is actually that encapsulates it. Like the outside world outside of like the world that we now live in, Zoe, after all this bullshit, they live in the world where the poop emoji is poop. Like the actual smell of shit and its effects are like dealing with it. Like they have a separation from, like they have this cutesy, almost like kind of like how people feel about animals because they watched a bunch of Disney movies. Like they think that they have like personalities like those characters and things. The anthropomorphized ones. It's hard to say. Mm-hmm. But
I can't say that word either.
Yeah. But it really is like they have a separation from reality. It's sort of like the people that don't know where the ground beef comes from. They don't know it actually comes from cow. Like those are the people that are in charge of democracy, folks.
Yeah. I went to I used to do education, wildlife education. I worked at a raptor rescue and we had to go to this private party one time. So this was like a gated community, very wealthy family. And this little girl wanted us to like release some owls at her party. So like we came out, we brought some owls and, you know, she had a bunch of friends there.
Where you had like the glove and like they flew and came back to you and landed on the glove. That is so badass, Zoe.
We didn't train them to fly to come back. We were just training them to like, you know, fly off and like go be free sort of thing.
Okay. Well, that's probably better.
It is still falconry. Yeah. We were doing that. And, you know, I guess I should start with, when you go to a place like this and it's a gated community and very nice homes and very wealthy people, and you sort of have an assumption that they know basic things about life. And I was very shocked when I was really glad I was sitting in the back and no one could see my face when this happened. Somebody asked, "So do the birds give birth? What do the babies look like?" And like the guy at the front who actually had the bird who was supposed to answer the question, he had been asked this before. And he's like, it's a bird. So like birds lay eggs. And like, this was a shock to everyone in the room that birds lay eggs.
I mean, I'm not saying that I did the best in biology. In fact, I was kind of a young hoodlum. You probably shouldn't like leave me unattended in a biology lab, like with access to anything I can light on fire.
Me either. My high school record would tell you that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I've listened to a lot of interviews recently where people have brought up the GATE program, like for gifted kids and everything. Postwood actually asked me about that. And I've listened to a bunch of other podcasts recently talking about it, but whenever they tested kids into that sort of stuff, I was too bad to be part of the classes.
Yeah.
So maybe that saved me from like a lot of programming. Cause like
I'm kind of happy I didn't get in that group.
Yeah. Cause I mean, the people that did though, and just like followed all the rules, like they really truly wholeheartedly believe. Like I talked about this last week a little bit, but Wheezy had a conversation with this astrophysicist guy that didn't believe that the moon landing happened, but he believed pretty much everything else was legit, like when it came to like certain conspiracies and whatnot. But just like, how could you be so confident in one thing being a complete work and then look past everything else that could be? Not that everything is. I mean, some of us can get in those doldrums where just like, oh, fuck,
I feel like real. Maybe he was like just starting on the path. I don't know. I feel sorry for, I have sympathy for people who are just new to this information because it's so much different from everything that you've been taught. We sound like we're crazy people to other people. So I sort of understand on one level that, okay, well, if you're new to this, then you only want to go down like maybe one rabbit hole at a time. That's all you have the capacity for. I get that. But there is a lot of willful ignorance in experts. And it is pretty much how they're indoctrinated in school. Like it's not an education process. It's an indoctrination process.
Well, and look at their patterns too for how they kind of encounter any type of critique or critical thought. Where they will immediately turn and be accusatory. Like you'll see this a lot in the Israel Gaza arguments too, but you know that the people are trained, literally trained, to go at you and kind of like accuse you of some kind of, I mean, it's easy to do the isms, right? We're all used to that shit at this point. But you know, or an ist, you know. But like the anti-vaxxer label got used in that very way. You know, so as soon as you brought up the fact that, oh, did you know that, you know, this asshole that used to work for Pfizer also is part of Trump's cabinet? And then you get that, oh, you know, you're just an anti-vaxxer. You know, it's a way to label something in order to minimize it and dismiss it. And if you can add another descriptor to it that makes it seem even silly, and people like you that do this, you know, you end up killing people. And that's the end of their argument. And they have nothing factual to ever show you. They don't have to pull up anything. They don't have to, like, you know, even those that cite sources for stuff like that, they're citing claims.
Right. No, I go round and round with those people because I ask them a critical thinking question back at them, which they can't answer. And then, you know, they come at me with, you know, some other accusation. And then I just throw another critical question back at them. And they're just like, I don't know what to do. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, you get to see them lock up because they have to search for, like, the correct response.
Because they don't think like that. They're not taught to think like that. So it throws them off, and they don't really know how to handle it.
Well, this is a hard question too, because there's been talk of this, and they talked about it on AM Wake Up not too long ago too, about people that are really NPCs, like in real life, that just don't have an internal dialogue and will just go along with shit.
Oh yeah.
And they could be shockingly smart. Like, smart, at least in the abilities to, like, you give them a task, they can do it. You know, you want them to be a heart surgeon, boom, you got yourself a new heart there, pal. But ask them a critical question and they're just like, fuck.
Isn't that what the New World Order wants?
Oh, yeah, automatons. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why I love the movie Metropolis so much, because it's fucking future. Like, it's just everything about that automated AI, like, robot, and just how we're emulating it, too. Like, emulating it in speech, emulating it in presentation, emulating it in what we can concentrate on for about 30 fucking seconds. You know, those types of things. Like, we really are in its throes right now.
It is a crazy time we're living in.
Well,
every morning I'm just like, okay, another day of the clown show. What's going to happen today?
Oh, yeah. And who knows what's going to happen with this eclipse going on? Like, I plan on having the drizzle. From the great Grand Theft World Liberty Radio on next week. Right on. So maybe. And that's if we have civilization at that point, because it's post eclipse. Like, we never know these days. But, you know, until then, though, what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw up a banner that I had made earlier to let people know where they can follow you in some of the places. I didn't get a chance to add the extra Gab page that we talked about, but there should be enough there for people if they're looking to find your Substack and your website and all the cool things where people can find you. And folks, I am going to add in the description of this video some of the links to the donation pages, because you do have a GoFundMe and other stuff. Like, do you want to mention that stuff since I didn't drop that in the banner here yet?
Oh, yeah. I haven't really been asking for donations lately because I wanted to have the book out and ready. I started last year before I got censored so many times. I've been censored multiple times now. It seems like every time I get going, then I get shut down and I get censored. And that's been a year. So I started kind of doing like a pre-sale thing, and that's when I started the Give, Send, Go. So that's out there for donations, but really I've been writing articles on my Substack. And that's the main place to follow me. I guess that's my biggest subscriber population there, and I'm pretty active there. I also hang out on Telegram. So yeah, Substack you can give donations to, and that one works. But yeah, Give, Send, Go is definitely there, and please use it because it keeps getting shut down every 90 days and no one puts anything in it. Yeah, and the book should be out hopefully. I don't want to give an actual date, but I'm in the post-production kind of stuff, getting it ready for print. So by fall, there's actually a subheading in there for the election year virus. So I'm determined to get it out this year that it is an election year, because as we all know how 2020 went down, pretty sure 2024 is not going to disappoint. So I wanted to get my book out because, especially with disease X on the radar, I feel like maybe my book's got some hints about what they're going to pull for disease X in there. So wanted to get it out there.
And I have the t-shirt store up here that people can visit as well.
Yeah. You can also go to my website, which is thrillkillmedicalcult.com, and you can find the t-shirt shop there. You can also find my blog and all the links in there. I think I even added the Gab one, which is just at @ZOWE_TKMC for Thrillkill Medical Cult. And that's what I am on Twitter also. I think those are the only platforms I'm on right now. I'm going to get on some more soon. But.
And there's that Substack, folks. Go and subscribe there. And you can also pledge there. So you can do monthly pledges and things like that. People can make donations that way. So
yeah, you can hit a donate, but you don't have to just do the monthly subscribe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Substack's been good to me so far. I mean, the only thing they've done thus far that was kind of a bummer was they did that Substack Notes platform. It was supposed to be like a new social media deal, but it's the same thing as what Gab and Minds was when I first started this show, where it's just like, it seems like a great idea. You know, you have something that's separate from the mainstream whenever it comes to the social media, but then no interaction on it. So I've gotten a lot of,
I just got a lot of interaction through Notes.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm
Well, I posted a meme and it went viral, and then everything else kind of went viral. So yeah, it was just like a matter of getting past the algorithm, I think.
Cracked the code then.
Yep.
Hey, it happens. It happens. I mean, that's what we're
But now I have more thought, because I've been really active on Notes. Like pretty much every day I'll put something on Notes, something that I would put on like my social media.
Okay.
I'll put on Notes just to have something every day, because I'm not a proliferative enough writer that I have like a full article to write every day or every week. And I'm just one person. I've been trying to write my book myself. I've been trying to edit my book myself and do the website and all that other stuff. And it's a full-time job and I'm not getting paid for it. So I figured, well, I've actually been trying to, you know, collect other people's work that I can use to kind of put something on my Substack to just keep some interest so people know I'm still active. But then the Notes has been where I've been the most active, and that it's only been recently. So I don't know if like they changed the algorithm or if I did just crack the code, but now I actually have more people following me on Notes than I do as subscribers.
Yeah. I have gotten a lot of more followers recently, I've noticed, on Substack, and it confused me, because then I looked at like how many people were getting my emails. I'm like, well, that hasn't radically changed. Why aren't these numbers matching? So I guess that makes sense too. Maybe I should start posting stuff daily to it.
They do have an email too, where like you can send an email to your subscribers that says, follow me on Notes. So they know to do that. Like if they've been a longtime subscriber and they're used to getting the emails, then they'll get an email to say, hey, there's this Notes thing.
All right. See, this is the kind of shit that we have to do in the alternative media community, folks. We have to figure out how to break these algorithms. So we're doing our best to do that here at TMP. And in fact, if you want to go and check out this week's monologue and source list, this week's source list brought to you by Zoe. She submitted a lot of great articles. Some of the things that we pulled up here on the screen, some of the things we can get around to, but you can go and check those out. So the Citizens Research Team, or CRT, we're taking it back, folks. You know, the people that are out there that like to do the type of work that Zoe does, and you know, maybe you're researching your own book. Maybe you will write a book in the future. I mean, maybe reading some of this stuff will put you on that path. I know there was many things that kind of prompted me to want to create content, you know, in this field. What was the spark that made you want to, you know, sort of get into the content creation part of it, though, like the writing of the book and everything? Because that's a big personal step too,
writing something.
It's so personal.
Yeah. Being in the freedom community, like the first thing that I did when I quit my job, even before I did, I was trying to figure out what was going on all in 2020. And so it was like my survival instinct, find other like minds. And you know, I was networking my ass off. And I decided when I quit my job that I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought again.
Well, no, we were talking about like, no, it's okay. Like when you decided to take on the writing, like,
personal, and I would talk to people in all these different spaces. I was like part of all these different groups. And like I said earlier, like Christian conservatives and medical freedom people, and just people that I would talk to anyone that would listen, because I feel like this information, if you know it, can save lives if you're willing to listen to it. I mean, so I, you know, try and tread lightly with some people, obviously, and not totally freak them out. But a lot of people didn't know this, even in the freedom community, even people that are experts. I even spoke with the person that's organizing the Children's Health Defense about my experience in the hospital. And she was like, wow, I didn't even know some of that. And so still to this day, I meet people that have researched this a lot, and they don't hear some of the things that I know about. And I don't know if it's just because of the position that I had in the hospital that allowed me to put things together. I don't know if it's that I've always not thought along political lines, so I'm able to think outside of the box that way. I don't know if it's because I was a victim myself of the medical death cult before the pandemic, and that is what made me question things, whereas other people weren't willing to. I don't know. But after talking to all these people, I just decided, wow, I was in this unique position. I saw something in real time, even though I wasn't, you know, I worked remote, so I wasn't like face to face with patients watching this happen, but you can see everything happen in their vital signs and in their records, and in even down to like the notes that they had with their caretakers on a daily basis. So, I mean, you still get, it's like kind of watching a movie, but in writing almost. So you still get an impression of what was going on. And I felt like someone needs to know this. Like, I don't know if Anne Frank knew when she wrote her diary how big it was going to be, how much of an impact it was going to have. Because she was just a little girl that was just writing her thoughts in a journal. And it happened to be during a historic time, and something really crazy was happening to her and her family. And I felt like, wow, something really crazy just happened. And this is historical. We all know we lived through something historical that our children's children will be talking about, that's changed things for humanity forevermore. I mean, maybe our entire genome has been changed. So this is a catastrophic event. I call it a genocide. I just told someone today online, 17 billion people were killed by vaccines is the guess. That's more than World War II. So there's a massive die-off happening. There's definitely going to be talking about that. And the last time I knew of massive die-off was World War II during Nazi Germany. And I never heard any story told other than, you know, the Anne Frank story, really from like the German perspective and how it actually came about. And I thought, you know, I don't know if I can write a book. I don't know if I can make this make sense to anybody, but what I've been able to do in my career as a coder is make things make sense to people that are complicated. And so maybe I can take that skill, and I can take this complicated information, and maybe I can boil it down to where people can understand how I put the dots together. And I'm not saying I have all the answers. I'm just saying this is what I noticed. And actually, now all the research is starting to say that what I was noticing was true, which is the really weird thing. And so I felt like I needed to write this down. So even if people, you know, that are alive right now, we already lived through it. We already have an opinion about what happened. And so my book might just be like confirming, you know, what you lived through during our lifetime. But what about 30 years from now, 40 years from now, 50 years from now? Are they even going to know what happened? And then is there going to be a story that they're going to have access to explain the counter narrative to what the history books are obviously going to say? And so I wanted to create that.
Well, that is part of my mission here with TMP, is to preserve these conversations so that people years from now that are looking back and researching what was going on in the minds of people that were resisting what was happening to our world, that they'll be able to see these conversations. They'll be able to find books like yours, hopefully. Right. And be able to preserve those and archive those too. Like, that's a big thing, especially with physical media. Like, man, like just the ability to hold a book in your hands and what that'll mean in the future.
We were talking about that on AM Wake Up too with Ryan. We were, you know, during Nazi Germany, they did the book burnings to prevent people from getting the knowledge that they didn't want people to have, so that they could have the thought control, because that's the whole thing, right? They didn't want people to have the truth, because if they did, they might rise up against them and try and stop the plan from going forward, right? So fast forward to now, and now everything is online. And now we notice that they shadow ban and they fix the algorithms and they take people's websites down and delete videos and things like that. So we can't necessarily count on having media like this available 20 years down the road. You know, we can try and put it on the blockchain and we can make DVDs and flash drives and back it up and archive it. And it might be saved for a while, but I mean, they're even trying to take down archive.org.
Yeah.
So we don't know how long that's going to last either. And so I know like James Corbett does things like he'll put all his media on like CDs and flash drives so that there is a physical form. And that's kind of the irony of why I wanted to have a printed book. I mean, I'll have an electronic version also, but an audio book, all that. But I wanted to have a print book, even though people tell me nobody actually reads print books and that's not where the money is or whatever. I wanted to have that because I thought, you know, 20, 30 years down the road, if the electronic stuff isn't there, that paper thing will probably still be there because they don't really, they have the ability to go online and censor all this stuff, but they don't necessarily, once it's in paper, it's a lot harder for them to go door to door to everyone's house and say, let me see your book collection. You're not allowed to have that. I'm going to confiscate it or take you to jail or whatever they're going to do.
No, you're very correct in that. I mean, all the other things and even what was going on in the chat earlier about, you know, the ways that our communications can be traced and who said what to whom and when. I mean, there's definitely a log of that type of information for every one of these types of conversations. But on paper, yeah, come get it, baby. So, and we have one last great comment from Yona. I think you would enjoy. Thank you, Yoda. Man, gotta add some levity. You do. So let's do this. Let's wrap some things up. I just want to throw this banner up there too. TMP. This is a podcast network created to escape the censorship, persecution, and violence that's used to prevent open and honest conversations. So I want everybody to be able to contribute to TNP in their own way. The easiest way to do that, the easiest way to become a contributor is to just like and share these videos. Because like what Zoe mentioned earlier, just from people sharing a meme that she had put out there, it helped put her in contact with a bunch of more people that probably have been through similar situations that we went through during the past few years and are looking for a community of people that they can talk to. And I had a great conversation earlier today about a very dark topic with somebody that I've come in contact with, you know, through TNP and our Telegram group. And just like that conversation alone, like gave me a great moment of pause today to think about life and to think about how I thought about life and how I process death. And we've talked a lot about some really dark shit. I mean, potential genocide of people because of this mass medical experimentation on people. So you have to think, like, you know, if we're the types of creatures out there that are capable of something like that, then what is the good in us? How do you focus on the good in people? So, I mean, so you're going to be coming into contact in person with a lot of people that have fought this fight, similar to you and similar to many others that we've had on TMP and continue to have on TMP. With that, here, I can pull this up. You had shared this flyer with me a little while back. It's still there. So maybe it's not coming up there. Oh, no, there it is. Boom. All right. So this is, it says the bus is coming to Oregon. Southern Oregon, April 13th, Salem, April 15th, tax day. Ew.
Tax day. I thought that too. So I'm going to be speaking at the event on April 15th on tax day in Salem, Oregon. Dr. Paul Thomas is going to be there also, and I have to go on after him. And my friend Rachel will be there. And she started an organization called Pro Medical Freedom, where she went to people's houses and brought them oxygen and other alternative drugs and saved them so they did not have to go to the hospital. And we also, it was a whole organization of people that was organized around a Telegram chat, believe it or not, that would help get people out of the hospital so the hospitals couldn't kill them. So she will be talking about that. I'll be talking about how I found her, and I'll be talking about the hospital protocols on the bus, and I'll be doing a little speech about that also.
Right on, Zoe. Yeah, I hope we can make a live stream of that happen. We're trying to coordinate potentially with the people running the event to make sure that we can, you know, broadcast things, because, you know, we want to be
There's some legal precautions. They're not allowed to call it a bus anymore. It's supposed to be the people's study. Originally, this was one of the earlier posters, but now it's called the people's study for legal reasons, and there won't be anything political. We won't be saying anything political. Nobody wants to get sued. So yeah, we just have to make sure that we get the green light. But I'm thinking probably yes. So I'll have to follow up. But yeah, if we can live stream that, that would be amazing.
Yeah, guerrilla media tactics. That's what we have to resort to. And I want to get speeches like yours and others, you know, preserved for history too, so that people can share those, meme those. You know, send those out there and make those viral if you want.
Totally.
You know, that's the type of thing that we need to do. So anybody out there that has the skills to, you know, do media production in that sense too, to clip out stuff that TMP puts out there, do that stuff. Like I'm all about that, you know, value for value system, similar to our friends in AM Wake Up. What the banner that I just put on the screen there, that this is our version of that. You can become a contributor by you can contribute $1 a month, $5 a month, or $10 a month through Spotify for podcasters, whatever the fuck it's called now. There's a link. They changed it on us. And then you can also find us on Subscribestar, and you can also send us Rumble Rants. There's three different ways that you can contribute financially if you want to. But the best way, like I said, is to share this stuff. You know, this flyer is going to be in on the, since it's a PDF form, I'm going to put this on the subscribe star because that's where the TMP document vault is. So Zoe, the Supreme Court.
Oh, and if you guys want the location for the event, you have to sign up for the email because they haven't actually given like the address yet.
Well, yeah, because you guys probably have to because of security concerns these days, right? Which are like that. So it's understandable. Yep. Because people are taught that the evil anti-vaxxers are here to, you know, try and convince people to do harm to themselves or their children or their community, because they've been fed that bullshit. And they're turned into enemies when otherwise they're probably good-natured people that probably are fairly smart, but just they were led astray by this propaganda.
I mean, I kind of feel sorry for them. We're the really weird part is that we're actually trying to fight for them.
Yes.
It's like we're trying to tell them there's a snake in the grass. There's a snake in the grass. And they're like, no, there's not. And they're just walking straight for it. And we're like, no, come on.
I understand that frustration. But that really is the truth, though. It's hard to admit to. I mean, it would be easier to just be like, oh, we're so superior because we're the smart ones that didn't fall for it. We're just like, no, you could have been in that. You could have been in that position. Just a slight variance or, you know, difference in your life or choices made where it's just like, no, I looked at the ups and the downs of this. It wasn't worth losing my job. It wasn't worth, you know, not being a member of the union. It's not getting my retirement or being able to put my kids through fucking college or whatever the decision was. And those type of, I'll call them Rockefellian decisions. You know, it goes back to the right to life argument and everything else, which is people make that sacrifice of life. Even if it's right. Their own, even if it's their own time and efforts in the world, sacrifice to a different life, which you talked about before, right. Zoe, like having to go back to college and struggle and sort of like just to stay afloat in this world. That I talked about with my friend Chuck Ocelli a few weeks ago, that debtor's class that exists in the middle class. You know, the upward mobility that was promised to us all and the fact that we'll do better than our parents. And that's why they sacrifice so much. And now that we own nothing and we hate it.
Well, the material things, I mean, they don't bring you fulfillment. They never did. I mean, to me, for me, early on, I remember thinking, okay, well, and I heard someone say this, but I was already thinking it. And I think it was a physician that was repeating something that they said from World War II, even. And it was, you know, I did nothing when they went for the elderly. I did nothing when they went for the medical workers. I did nothing when they went for the military. I did nothing when they came for the children. And there was no one left when they came for me. And I just felt like if every single one of us took a stand and stopped, you know, stood up to this, then it couldn't proceed. So why not me? I'm here. I have the ability to do it. Because if everyone just says, well, you know, I'll leave it to someone else, then we end up in the situation where we're in. Someone has to stand up and be the first one. And I mean, I felt like I was alone for a long time, but now I'm starting to find more and more people that stood up to this, just like you said.
Well, I wanted to show before we wrap things up, I did want to show that website on there for people. So childrenshealthdefense.org, in the lower right of your screen, if you're watching, definitely go and check that out and look up this event. If you're in the Oregon area and you're available, you know, during the days of these events, stuff like that, maybe you're not available. Maybe you got to move some shit around, you know, like it takes a little bit of sacrifice to make this happen. I'm sure there's plenty of people taking off of work. I'm sure there's plenty of people burning up vacation time, burning up money that they don't fucking have, you know, it's just to make this happen. So like, if you can go out there and show some support, it really matters a lot to people. We are doing things now that, you know, this is the best way to kind of put forth like a civil type of action, peaceful people, just having a discussion, you know, having a voluntary meeting with one another towards working towards a goal. I don't think there's any like big muckety muck or hierarchy or, you know, whatever behind this that's kind of driving this other than people of similar interests. So, I mean, I realize that pretty much everything in this universe that we've been introduced to, like, it has the sniff of fake and gay to it. But like, you gotta break out of that eventually. Like, you have to be able to link up with other people and actually get shit done, or else our generation fails. You know, that we drop the ball, and then I don't know how it's picked up later. I don't know where in this dystopian future that we can wind up in a few years, a few short years, where there is.
I think we all realize this is a make it or break it moment for humanity.
It really is. It really is. It's going to be a turning point. It's going to be a giant turning point in it. The birth of this century and the fight for autonomy is going to be the war of culture in our lifetime. And if we lose that war, then we just become blank-faced NPCs that just fucking receive orders and push the button to murder our fellow human beings if they're no longer economically viable. So, and with that, join the TMP Telegram group, where we can swipe all your personal information and bugger you while you're not looking. Just fuck with everybody. No, but Zoe, I appreciate you coming on and shooting the shit with me and talking about all this crazy stuff and talking about what it's like to write a book about this stuff. I mean, I've met people that have written books about this stuff. It's not easy. It's not easy to get distribution or publishing or anything business related, because nobody wants to touch you, because again, you're a pariah. You're talking about something that shall not be talked about. You're questioning things that shall not be questioned. So really appreciate you giving us your time, staying up late and partying with me for a little bit. Hope to see you back on TMP sometime soon. I think you said you might be popping in this week's Saturday Night Anarchy for a bit. Looking forward to that. So that's always a fun show. Shout out to Tom Cooper. I saw him in the chat earlier. I don't know if he's turned in for the night or not, but love brother Tom. Thanks to everyone else that was here for the TMP chats on both the AM Wake Up channels and of course the TMP channel on Rumble here. And then those that tuned in on Twitter, I see we do have some Twitter watchers out there too. Maybe our special agents, maybe some of the technical gremlins that were fucking with the show earlier. Who knows?
Maybe. Shout out to you guys too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We love the, it's Nature Boy that loves the hate listeners. All the hate listeners and gremlins out there. Yeah. Thank you for your patronage too. But we're going to wrap things up for this week's TMP Live. Look for the source list with all of these awesome links in them. And then also check out the TMP document vault. You'll find that link right off the link in our description here for one-time donations. So that's where I put all the PDFs that I pulled up, like the Supreme Court case here and the flyer you all just saw there. So I'll be able to do that in the next few moments. But Zoe, I'm going to sign off for the night. Anything left to say to the TMP universe before we go away?
I guess my tagline, you were all meant to be free.
I love that. That's a great way to do it. All right. Well, until we meet again and until we are free, we are the new prisoners.